This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is BFM 89.9. I'm Koo Soo Chong, joined by Philip C and Wong Shaoning. It's my first day back in BFM.
We've missed you.
In a fortnight. Appears,
yeah, I think it seems like years, but it's actually been 2 weeks. I was listening to you guys yesterday on radio. I thought you sounded fantastic. You know, Wong, I must say this, right? You made taxation sound sexy at 8:15. I'm seeing you did.
Well done, Shaoning.
You did justice to Virendrajit Singh. You did.
And Carmelo Felito.
Carmelo Felito, right? Who's got a surname that is belongs in Hollywood, by the way.
Right. No, it was an interesting discussion. I think it was something that we all know needs to be done. I mean, it's evident. But whether there's the political will to do so, of course, is the big question. And also, whatever said and done, taxes is a political weapon, right?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say something else, something that needs to be done.
No, I mean, we do need to reform our taxation system, isn't it?
Yes, but did you think they had similar views, or were they converging views?
They had similar views. That's the truth. I mean, they are both... Of course, Virendrajit is a practitioner and of course, they're also head of different accounting associations. Carmelo is, an academic, policymaker. Yeah. But they both have some similar views, but they have some different suggestions, which were interesting.
Yeah, sometimes when I host these kind of panels, I try and make each one, start fighting with the other. But I noticed you didn't do that. It's not your game, maybe.
Well, how would you have liked it if I started a war in this?
It's about contrasting views, you know.
Okay. She's a lover, not a fighter.
She's an MJ, not a McCartney. Yeah.
What is that? What's the reference about? What's MJ? Sorry,
Michael Jackson.
Oh,
Ebony and Ivory. Showing your age.
There is no correlation between Michael Jackson and Ebony and Ivory. What do we have on today?
I don't know. You tell me.
Okay, we're going to have a conversation about Japan Inc. As private equity tries to get into the space, but Toshiba is in the limelight.
Okay, I will be talking about shareholder letters. And what about you, Wong?
Oh, well, we'll be looking at all the global headlines. Of course, the most recent one that just came out, just maybe an hour ago, is the verdict in the George Floyd case.
Okay, all that and more in just a couple of minutes. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Travis with Why Does It Always Rain on Me, a song that could have been written for Anwar Ibrahim. Bad joke.
Or actually every day now.
Or every day now.
In the evening.
Exactly, it does, right? Yeah.
Yes.
So apparently JB has left the room, and he's left the room, and he's written a letter.
You don't mean Johor Bahru, right?
No.
You mean Jeff Bezos.
Yes, that's the one.
I was confused for a moment.
JB, I was like, wrecking my mind.
I was like,
could have been Jason Bond, could have been James Bond.
Which is my favourite fictional character, by the way. My dream is to be James Bond. But anyway, another story for another day.
To be James Bond or to be with James Bond? Women want to be with him and men want to be him. You see, that's the thing.
Excuse me, I think we shouldn't be gender biased. I want to be him. I want the car, I want the gadget, I want the lifestyle.
She wants to be the spy.
I want to be the spy.
I want the girls.
Okay, we all know what you're like, John.
And back to the other JB.
So yeah, JB, okay.
Well, Jeff Bezos, I think, wrote his last shareholder letter. It felt like a novel.
He's left the post as CEO of Amazon, but he's now become chief whatever, right?
Yeah, as a chairman. So he's going to relinquish the CEO role. So his final farewell note, I think, was a long romance love story, right? Kind of saying all the things
that
he's
done.
How many
pages, Philip?
Oh, it was like 20 pages, pretty long.
All I know is when I look at it, I get worried because it's like 20 letters to shareholders and it's a 22-minute read.
What disturbs me the most is that Phil actually printed the letters.
Front and back.
Okay, at least he double-sided it. He saved some paper.
Yeah, because on page 14...
But on big font, because that will reveal his age.
Yeah. But on page 14, Jeff talks about the climate pledge. So, you know, obviously.
I found interesting is, okay, the thing is, there's so much brickbats over Amazon, especially with the unions. So when you read it, you have a lot of cynicism and uncertainty about how really he's genuinely interested in it. But it's a very well-written letter. He really talks about the numbers. But she is not impressed, Kelly Shaoning.
I mean, you're talking about the richest man in the world, right? The billionaire, right? He can hire anyone, no, anyone to write a decent letter to shareholders. It would be a disaster if it was bad because he just didn't hire the right people.
No. I'm with Phil on this. Okay. I think that Jeff actually wrote his own letter.
You think so? I think about 50 people looked at these pages. How many is it? Like 20 pages?
I think he has.
And poured over every single
Could have been subbed.
Yeah.
Yes, but I think he did start and initiate, at least had the ranker in place.
Like a big broad plan.
Is to be distinguished from other chairman's letters, for example.
Okay.
The one written by a certain Top Glove chairman, which was circulated very widely on WhatsApp yesterday, and which was obviously and quite clearly not written by him personally because, you know, for obvious reasons.
Well, I think when you're at a corporate and you have these key messages, it's an art, right? It's an art to actually write it in a way that appeals to the audience. And different people will read this letter. So employees read it, shareholders read it, public read it, the media read it. It's a challenge, right, that your key messages somehow resonate with each audience. Okay. And that's a skill, okay?
Sure. But there are two approaches to doing this. There are some people, like I think for this Jeff Bezos letter is, I have an idea, let me structure it and read it out and draw it up properly. That is what I want to say.
Says the ex-consultant.
Okay, that's one. But there's the other one where pass it to the other minion to do the work and then read it, then throw the paper and then make edits to it to simplify it. So there are two ways of writing the letter, I feel. So someone basically had a structure, someone just is responding to There is no rule book when it comes to, because
it's about you writing your letter to your shareholders, and when you have a controlling or at least a majority substantial stake in the business, you have the autonomy to do that. It's the difference between an owner-led company and a professional CEO-led company.
Okay, so I think some of us had a quick glance, right? What did you think of the letter?
I think it was brilliant.
You think it was well-written?
I'm very cynical about Amazon and what it stands for, but the thing is, I felt inspired by what Jeff wrote in that letter.
Yeah, I did. It's not easy to move Khoo Soo Chong, okay?
I think it reflects him because he's a very numbers guy.
Yeah. Mm.
So the biggest thing I found was that he broke down the value he created by shareholder.
He's an ex-investment banker, right?
So you can see his essence in the letter.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or not, it was there. Whereas there's some, I think as you were mentioning just now, it's just a broad general statements that really don't mean much and amount to anything.
Well, you know, Jeff Bezos has been on panels and he's on YouTube, all over YouTube. Right? So you can tell what he sounds like. You can hear him speak. And when you read the letter that he ostensibly wrote, it sounds like him. And like some Chinaman CEOs or chairman that, you know, you can hear them on YouTube.
But there's
and then you read them in the letters, oh, this is not this filler line.
Okay, you know? But you know one thing
It's like official Twitter handles, right? You have these professional social media consultants that run your Twitter, your social media for you. It's not genuine. And the essence of social media is to be genuine.
My only issue is that when you look at some of the practices at Amazon, it doesn't sit well with this letter, you see. So, you know, for example, they were very active in trying to prevent a union from happening in Georgia, if I'm not wrong.
Yes.
They went all out, okay, to prevent it. And then there are cases whereby, you know, the workers were so overworked that they unfortunately had to pee in glass jars because they didn't have enough toilet breaks.
Well, that's true. But
and then there were high incidences of COVID-19.
No, it's true.
At the end of the day, what is a company all about? It's about its real actions, right? How you treat your employees.
Since when has Wall Street demonstrated a congruence between thoughts and actions? Or at least words and actions?
Well, it should be, because then after this, doesn't it feel empty?
What's the Grand Canyon?
In the letter, he did kind of address the issue. But to be fair to the union side, he did allow the vote to take place. And there was an overwhelming vote against the union. So maybe he did influence, but there was some democracy in action there.
Yeah,
because he didn't stop it from happening.
Well, you can't save the earth and build and make profits at the same time. There's no such thing. But by the way, I'm not sure about that.
No, I think you can have a balance. Otherwise, the world is doomed.
Maximum value and save the world cannot.
What about ESG investing?
It's nonsense. It's nonsense.
Okay, we have a separate conversation.
Yeah, we have a separate conversation as we move towards Earth Day on Thursday.
Okay, I've been given the twirling finger again. 6:30 in the morning, we'll come back after this with more of the same. BFM 89.9, that was Duran Duran with Come and Done, a song that Simon Le Bon wrote 30 years ago for Perikata Nationals. Let's go.
You're on a roll today.
Yeah, you're totally on a roll today.
Do you know what I mean?
He could travel time, Simon Le Bon could.
This was also in honor of Lanka Sheraton, or just before,
also,
right?
Yes.
But to be fair, I have to say I love love Duran Duran. I mean, it's like...
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's like the band of the 80s and the 90s, right? It captured the moment with their long hair.
Exactly.
And it was the BTS of the day.
Yeah, it was...
The
BTS. Hello, it was more than the BTS of the day.
You know,
day, okay?
You think Duran Duran would have a BTS McDonald meal? Duran Duran McDonald's
no,
meal?
No, I'm sure, because nowadays, every band is all about merchandising, right?
Yeah.
Isn't
yeah,
it? So there would be a McDonald's, they would have a KFC, a Texas Chicken, whatever you name it, water bottle.
And it's terrible. Yeah. You saw the recent BTS McDonald's meal. It's just 10 chicken McNuggets. What a waste.
How do you know all about this, Phil?
Oh, I'm into popular culture, Chua. Yeah. I'm into popular culture. I know everything.
Yeah, you can tell, obviously.
Well, talking about coming undone, it looks like Toshiba's CEO has come undone.
Oh.
Well, his name is Nobuaki Kurumatani. It's a bit like that Disney movie, right?
Not Hakuna Matata. No? Can you stop butchering other people's names?
Sorry, Nobu. Sorry.
Oh my goodness.
No, it is, right? Nobu is his first name.
I think you missed the memo on politically being correct, but never mind.
The story behind him coming undone is, I find this article actually in The Edge interesting because there was an employee poll saying they've lost confidence in a CEO. I have never ever seen employee internal polls showing whether they have confidence in the leadership of someone. That's shocking, especially in Japan.
Yeah, and this is interesting because Japan is a country of followers, right?
Obedient, not just workers. I mean, they're known to be very compliant.
It's a cultural phenomenon which has lasted hundreds of years. For shareholders to step out of line and say, we don't want you anymore, it's a very big thing. It's a tectonic
shift. Yeah, but employees is even more shocking.
Right? Because, lifetime jobs and all this kind of thing.
Yes.
Loyalty at the expense of your personal health, for example.
Yeah, you literally work to death, right?
Yeah.
You're like the salary worker, office worker. You go in every day, you work till 10 o'clock, then you take the train home, and then you repeat the cycle.
You go to the pub, you drink yourself silly, and then you sleep in
the capsule hotel.
In a capsule hotel! So what is going on in Japan?
So the survey is so interesting because in the survey, 60% say they have lost confidence in the CEO. They were not happy with it. There was a 20% decline from the last survey. And then they narrowed the survey to senior executives of the top 30, and half of them said they lost confidence. This was a pretty elaborate process in basically saying, hey, I don't think you're up to the job. And it was the employees that basically drove that. Although there was a lot of history behind it with private equity and all that coming through in Japan, which I think is driving this decision. But for Toshiba to do this, I think was pretty landmark.
Yeah.
But by the way, he has resigned, right? If I'm not wrong.
Yes.
Has resigned. I think it's the writing was on the wall. When you've got the shareholders unhappy, you've got the employees unhappy.
Yeah. I think that the clue lies in the details because I don't think too much should be read into this development at Toshiba, because if it's private equity led, it would have been, you know, obviously there would have been money driving this momentum behind Shell, employee activism, right? I don't think Japan is shifting in terms of its cultural norms just yet. I don't think you can read too much into it.
What you do hope, I think, is gradual changes and little bit by little bit, right? Cultural changes are probably the hardest to move away from. And I think Japan is waking up to the reality that as a corporate, and this is also driven by an article that I think Philip and I read over the weekend with The Economist, whereby you can see more global CEOs of global companies engaging with governments. And actually, we thought about this and we say it's actually not just governments. It's just engaging with a wider range of stakeholders than in the past.
That's very important.
Right?
Yes.
So you used to be like, okay, I'm a listed company or even not listed, and my 100% commitment is to the shareholders. That's no longer the case anymore. There's a multiple stakeholders that you need to look at, right? You've got government, you've got shareholders, you've got employees, you've got the general public, sometimes you have media, you have NGOs that look at your kind of work. You know, so many. And if you're a global CEO or a global company, you can't avoid engaging on different levels.
Craig, but the typical playbook for the private equity investor in the past was to take part in the, you know, your conventional interactions, right? Your one-on-ones with the CFOs, your AGMs.
Yeah.
And then you try and effect change, because what happens with private equity is you see gaps in the way that business
but
is
I
done.
But I think what happens is that, you know, you maybe get ignored, right? So the company shuts you down.
So now what they're doing here in the Toshiba's case is to go through via the employees.
Yes.
Because if they don't work, you don't make any money.
I think
that is very effective.
The other thing that they have done is to bring the war to the public, right? All these stories have sources. I'll put that in inverted commas. And sometimes you even see some of these private equity funds being very verbal, giving interviews, right? Saying that they don't like this company. Why? And also private equity, some of them have taken on something you don't like, Su Truong, but they've taken on an ESG slant. Yes?
Well, yeah.
So, you know, they come out and say, this is not good compliance, this is not good corporate governance, you know, it's, where's your social responsibility?
Yeah, so Toshiba is interesting because they have a lot of investment in nuclear in Japan. And I think this mix with private equity and what you see in employees, it's just such a frothy mix because Japan hasn't had experience with private equity as much as other markets. So I think it's causing a lot of discomfort.
I think also they just generally don't engage so much as compared to some of the MNCs in Europe or in America. They've never had so much scrutiny, but if they want the stock market to be revived, and you know, the stock market's done pretty well, 30,000 and above,
yeah. I mean,
then it's a matter of time.
Have you tried talking to an elderly Japanese gentleman? It's not easy, but well, 6:25 in the morning, as usual, tell us what you think, whether it's on shareholder activism in Japan and Toshiba, or what was the other thing we were talking about?
Shareholder letters.
Right? And the genuineness or not of those things. The Twitter handle is at BFM Radio, or the WhatsApp is at 018-789-8899. Steady As She Goes by The Raconteurs, coming up next, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Faithless, about the greatest boxer of all time, Muhammad Ali. I'm Chuang, joined by Xiaoning and Philip C. Now, it's about time we look at the international headlines. And George Floyd, that poor victim of 2020, which actually sparked a huge number of demonstrations and riots all across the US, has finally been vindicated when the jury reached a verdict to find Derek Chauvin
guilty of all charges.
That's
over
right.
George Floyd's death, right? So he was guilty over second degree murder, third degree murder, and manslaughter. Now this is really big news. If I'm looking at the news feed, Boris Johnson has already said he's welcomed the verdict.
Boris Johnson waded into this.
Boris Johnson, exactly. Of all people, he actually waded in on the European Super League as well, didn't he?
He needs to have more work.
He needs to get a life, man.
But what's interesting, obviously, of course, naturally, all the US leaders are taking this very seriously, and they were watching the verdict live, and the president of the United States will be addressing it from the cross hall of the White House, which was the same room where Barack Obama announced the killing of Osama bin Laden, which gives you a sense how momentous this decision is.
No, it's big because you know, George Floyd and the demonstrations that erupted as a result of basically videographic evidence of this cop, right, with his knee on this guy's neck for 9 minutes, right? I mean, if you don't find this guy guilty, then you might as well just bin your entire legal system.
But I think it's also points to this deep-rooted issues that America faces.
Racism.
Right? Yeah, clear racism. Mm. And, you know, addressing this is great. Maybe it's one step in terms of healing the nation, right? Because these issues are not new. They've been around. And even since George Floyd's unfortunate death, there have been other cases where poor black Americans were actually...
Well, look no further
than...
It's not like it's stopped.
It's still continuing. So the society needs a re-examination of their values, their culture. The police force needs to do so. Governments need to do so. It's this verdict perhaps is part of that process.
Well, some would say that racism still exists. And you would say also equally that racism increases in ferocity when circumstances are difficult and tough, right?
Yeah, which because COVID-19
you, is. Which COVID-19
and was, is.
And you yeah. don't, you don't, you know, you don't
It brings out the worst in people.
Racism is the manifestation of ignorance and like a lack of knowledge about another person or another culture, right?
Yeah.
And you can see that with the hate Asian crime today in America.
Yeah.
So for this case here, it was landmark because if you look at and listen to the trial, which was live, you found actually police officials, senior police officials saying that Derek Chauvin's approach was wrong.
Yeah, even the police chief admitted it himself.
I know, but in the past, police tended to protect each other. So this was a very clear shift where they were basically saying what the police did was wrong. So I think that's a break away from that and a sign of progress in my view.
It's a little bit like the employees at Toshiba breaking away from the norm, right? And voting against the chief executive. Yeah. Now, this item from also Xi Jinping, who has called for a new world order, that's also quite tectonic because he had an 18-minute speech and he basically launched a tirade against the US without naming the US to tell them to get off their pedestal because it's time for a new big dog in the room, which is basically them, lah.
Yeah, so he said that the unilateralism of individual countries should not give the whole world a rhythm.
That's like a big line. What was he
He write the speech himself?
Like Jeff Bezos.
Like Jeff Bezos.
I just was struck by, you know, the conversation we had yesterday, Xiaoning, that, oh, you know, Anthony Blinken and his counterpart in China were going to work together for a climate summit that was joint effort. And when I saw this, I was like, oh, okay, nothing really has changed.
I think, this happened at what they call the Bao Forum, okay? So the Bao Forum is China's equivalent to the Davos Summit. And it's supposed to be, I suppose, give an indication of what the Chinese leadership is really thinking. And the reality is that Biden and Xi Jinping are eventually going to have to meet, right? They always will do. So I think that there's a little bit of sparring going on. And would it be fair to say he's like firing the first shot too, you know? This is what I think. Joe Biden, you better bear that in mind, right? Because so far, Joe Biden has been pretty silent about his approach to China, except for the Alaska summit.
Yeah.
Because I guess America's got, you know, more issues on hand. Like,
well, unfortunately for the US, the more dollars it prints and the more fractured its society is, the quicker the new world order will come.
But there is one positive, though. If we rewind a few days ago, they both had a common approach when it comes to climate change.
Yes.
Right? They both came out to say that they will work together to prevent climate change. So it's not like I think that the relationship is completely fraught, but I think both leaders are trying to find their way in terms of dealing with each other and the messaging.
So the challenge for Biden is whether his strategy is effective in engaging China. What is contrasting with Trump is that he's taking a multilateral approach, which is, I want to build allies. But the problem he has is that the allies are all not singing from the same page. You look at Europe, they did a trade deal with China before Biden took office. So clearly not everybody is going to sing from the same hymn sheet. And that's one of his biggest challenges. And that's where I think, Chong, you're going to be seeing, what is he doing? Because he's trying to hone in everybody together. And it's going to be tough and challenging.
How many alpha males can sit on the top of the mountain? Alpha lions.
I think someone said there's one tiger that can sit on a mountain.
Yeah. Right? But you guys, a mountain is not necessarily just one mountain. It's a range of mountains.
Well, there can be a fault.
Banjaran Tahan.
Yeah, so you can have one mountain on the left and one mountain on the right.
And there can be faults of summits as well.
Yes,
so.
There we go.
Unfortunately, that whole thing is unfolding before our very. It's either the scariest time in the annals of history or the most exciting. Depends on how we interpret the glass of water. Okay, 6:45 in the morning. We'll come back after this. This time with local news. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Chic with "Would You Be My Baby" as Zahid gazes longingly at Kitsiang.
No, thank you.
Don't want. I'm Chuang John Mafilsi, and it's time to look at the local headlines. And I'm gonna start with the Edge Financial Daily about how the EPF has actually released an official statement dismissing viral messages that it would in effect pay dividends up to the age of 100, which then calls into question, unless you're Prince Philip, does it matter to you?
It does matter to me, because there are so many people who are going to be affected by this, no?
Yeah, true. But obviously if you live to a... How many people live
to 100? How many people live to 100? I think our life expectancy is like
Malaysia
70.
Is 87 for males and 80... No, sorry, 86 for males.
Really
and,
that high?
I think... No, sorry, 78 for males and 80 for females.
That's right. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm glad the EPA went out to debunk that message. It's really terrible when all these things just go viral across the board.
I mean, EPF savings, you know, the power of compound interest and investment is all about time. What else is in the headlines?
Okay, so I have kind of a dry one where Indonesia is holding its rate, but it's cutting its GDP outlook to 4.1 to 5.1%. That's quite in line with what Malaysia did also for the same period. They have all been revising down their expectations of growth for this year. I think it's a reality that, honestly, COVID is just still around and it's just hampering growth.
Inevitable, because you've got a fourth round of infections, right?
Yeah.
I've also got this story from the international newswires saying that banks, including DBS, Mitsubishi UFJ, Standard Chartered might actually bid for parts of Citigroup's consumer business. As we know, they have announced plans to exit their retail business in Southeast Asia, essentially 14 markets or something. And according to sources with direct knowledge of the matter, as opposed to those with indirect knowledge of the matter, but it seems intuitive, because why would you allow it to die a natural death? Because there's account holders, there's money with these customers. And there's a franchise.
Yeah, I think you have to be clear about your strategy here of retail especially. And you know retail is going to be a challenge if you're not a dominant player. I think Citi, under the new leadership of Jane Fraser, I think she came in, she did a strategic review. She found that these retail markets were not going to perform. And we had a conversation yesterday, actually, about what do we do with employers and employees of Citigroup in Malaysia. But this is where I think there'll be a lot of interested buyers for this. And I think they will look at it as a portfolio and say, okay, I need to basically get rid of it and maybe you have to buy the whole portfolio, essentially.
Yeah, look, I mean, depends on the quality of the book, depends on the amount of money involved, and obviously the valuation, you know.
It is so hard to shut down a bank here because you have so many commitments, obligations, loans, accounts.
Credit cards, savings accounts, right?
Exactly.
How do you shut that down? And besides, how can Citi, with its limited footprint, compete with Maybank? You cannot, you know.
Yeah.
It's just impossible, right? Okay, so Kosan. Kosan is one of the biggest rubber glove makers. They've reported today, also intuitively, I guess, a record high quarterly net profit of over a billion ringgit for the Q1 ended March 31st. And obviously, they'll pay a third of that money back as interim dividends. Really good for Kosan.
That landmark is that 1 billion net profit. I mean, if you look at the chart, it's huge. If you look at your chart, I think you're showing on the edge now, 1.041. And what was that same quarter was like a fraction of that, I think 10% only of that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously,
incredible.
Yeah, I think that now with the fourth, you know, wave of COVID infections, it'll really I think bear mentioning.
It makes
to
a
see
case for all these stocks coming
correct,
through.
But also to see whether the volumes stand up and whether ASPs will also stand up. What else is on the headlines?
Well, okay, we have Malaysian Reserve, the front page. This is going to be a problem, especially when people are basically asking for special allocations for specific needs. So in the front page is a special vaccination program for Hajj pilgrims will be needed. Now, Hajj will be basically taking place in June, July. If we have vaccine shortages, I'm not sure whether there'll be enough vaccines for our Hajj pilgrims. And that's going to be a challenge going forward because as we know that there are shortages of vaccines, especially in even executing phase two.
Well, even the whole idea of flying abroad to perform your Hajj, I mean, necessary though it may be, How is that going to be possible?
I think they were having high hopes that the Hajj program would take place this year because you would think that they would have all the protocols in place, everybody would have got vaccinated. Because in some countries, really like the United States, they're beginning to fly nonstop to certain countries where they allow. So I guess that doesn't seem to materialize.
Yeah, within limited travel bubbles, right? Just very quickly, Kyrie has talked about how 95% of frontliners have received their first dose of the COVID vaccine. But I think the truth is still the fact that Malaysia still lags.
Yeah.
You know, many countries around the world, whether it's, you know, obviously the US, Singapore, right? The notables.
Yeah, one of the notable things about Malaysia is that they've also made sure that there was a high second dosage within the first frontliners. So they followed the instructions in the 10, which is make sure that you get the second dose within 14 days.
Okay, 6:55, we'll come back after this with a 7 a.m. news bulletin. Then after that, we get a bit more serious with the market. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.